Today, prepare for a September crash. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, from the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's market review, we're going to focus in on Fed Chair Jerome Powell's speech at Jackson Hole, just 9 minutes in length, but enough to move the markets down significantly. For the Fed's monetary policies to have any effect, markets must transmit them via the financial conditions to the actual economy, and the Fed needs to make sure this happens. And today, this was an effort by Powell to get this job done. The speech actually was one of the strongest ever by the Fed chief, reflecting the onerous burden borne by the central bank in curbing inflation, retreating ever so slowly from four-decade highs. First, Powell said inflation needed to be controlled. This was their main mandate.
At past Jackson Hole conferences, I have discussed broad topics, such as the ever-changing structure of the economy and the challenges of conducting monetary policy under high uncertainty. Today, my remarks will be shorter, my focus narrower, and my message more direct. The Federal Open Market Committee's overarching focus right now is to bring inflation back down to our 2% goal. Price stability is the responsibility of the Federal Reserve and serves as the bedrock of our economy. Without price stability, the economy does not work for anyone. In particular, without price stability, we will not achieve a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all.
Next, he signaled there will be more rate hikes in the months ahead, taking the cash rate well above the neutral rate, meaning that they are intending to deliberately slow the economy.
While the lower inflation readings for July are certainly welcome, a single month's improvement falls far short of what the committee will need to see before we are confident that inflation is moving down. So, we are moving our policy stance purposefully to a level that will be sufficiently restrictive to return inflation to 2%. At our most recent meeting in July, the FOMC raised the target range for the federal funds rate to 2.25% to 2.5%, which is in the Summary of Economic Projections range of estimates of where the federal funds rate is projected to settle in the longer run. In current circumstances, with inflation running far above 2% and the labor market extremely tight, estimates of longer run neutral are not a place to pause or stop. July's increase in the target range was the second 75 basis point increase in as many meetings, and I said then that another unusually large increase could be appropriate at our next meeting. We are now about halfway through the intermeeting period. Our decision at the September meeting will depend on the totality of the incoming data and the evolving outlook.
And he acknowledged that this will hurt households and businesses, and also acknowledged that the current labor market was out of whack.
Restoring price stability will take some time and requires using our tools forcefully to bring demand and supply into better balance. Reducing inflation is likely to require a sustained period of below-trend growth. Moreover, there will very likely be some softening of labor market conditions. While higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to households and businesses. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation.
I'll put a link below to the full speech if you want to watch it. It was the first time it was streamed. So this message cut directly across the ranks of those saying that the Fed will pivot, arguing the Fed has really been signaling that it will soon, quote, pause the rate hikes or, quote, pivot to rate cuts, even though the Fed has raised its policy rate four times this year, including twice by 75 basis points. Those are the biggest rate hikes in years. So I think those commentators, which include hedge fund managers with a big Twitter presence and research gurus at financial institutions, as well as comments from many people across the internet and social media, all, of course, with an agenda and products to sell. The result was financial markets pivoted in mid-June and did the opposite of what the Fed actually wanted them to do. Financial conditions loosened since mid-June, with yields falling, spreads narrowing, and stock prices surging in a summer rally, which lasted about 2 months and peaked in mid-August. But then later in August, the markets did their own pivot. Yields rose again, financial conditions tightened a little, and stocks came down some. And now Powell has doubled down. Rates are going to rise, although the extent will be data dependent. They will go higher, period. Powell, in fact, evoked three times Paul Volcker, who became legendary as Fed chair by finally cracking down so hard on massive inflation that it triggered the double dip recession, but created decades of falling and relatively low inflation that have now been squandered.
During the 1970s, as inflation climbed, the anticipation of high inflation became entrenched in the economic decision-making of businesses and households. The more inflation rose, the more people came to expect it to remain high, and they built that belief into wage and price decisions. As former Chairman Paul Volcker put it at the height of the great inflation in 1979, inflation feeds in part on itself, so part of the job of returning to a more stable and more productive economy must be to break the grip of inflationary expectations. One useful insight into how actual inflation may affect expectations about its future path is based in the concept of rational inattention. When inflation is persistently high, households and businesses must pay close attention and incorporate inflation into their economic decisions. When inflation is low and stable, they are freer to focus their attention elsewhere. Former Chairman Alan Greenspan put it this way: for all practical purposes, price stability means that expected changes in the average price level are small enough and gradual enough that they do not materially enter business and household financial decisions. Of course, inflation has just about everyone's attention right now, which highlights a particular risk today. The longer the current bout of high inflation continues, the greater the chance that expectations of higher inflation will become entrenched.
So as a result, in afternoon trading in New York, the S&P 500 had its worst day since mid-June, and the NASDAQ 100 tumbled over 4%. Major equity indices dipped below their 100-day price averages, indicating the potential for more losses, according to many traders. Treasury two-year yields, which are more sensitive to imminent policy moves, rose alongside the dollar. The US two-year Treasury yield briefly popped to their highest level since October 2007, before stabilizing near two-month highs. Compared to the 10-year, it's still inverted, and that signals a recession ahead, of course. And with more restrictive monetary policies, rising interest rates, the odds of a recession next year have gone up. Powell wants financial conditions to tighten further and wanted the market to know that the Fed is not ready to declare victory over inflation yet, so Joe Gilbert, property manager in Integrity Asset Management. He also renounced any prospects of interest rate cuts soon. The market has to reprice this prospect. Future contracts, referencing the Fed's September policy meeting, priced in roughly even odds of a half point or three quarter point hike. The amount of additional tightening priced in for this year increased, though, with traders seeing lower chances of rate cuts in 2023. To Cliff Hodge at Cornerstone Wealth, the Fed is going to remain aggressive at the expense of growth, and traders should expect more volatility and tougher conditions for equities. Powell can't come right out and say that the Fed is walking us right into recession in order to crush inflation, but that is what this message unequivocally implies, said Hodge. So what does that mean for markets? Well, drastically reduces the chance of a soft landing and the bull case for new highs this year, he said. The Fed chief reiterated that another unusually large hike could be appropriate next month, though he stopped short of committing to one, adding that the decision would depend on the incoming data. Several officials have actually emphasized the central bank is in no way done, with Kansas City Fed chief Esther George noting that the destination of the federal funds rate may be higher than markets are currently priced for. And former US Treasury Secretary Larry Summers handed out some rare praise for the Fed, saying Powell's latest pledge to restrain inflation was a statement of being resolute. He said the policymaker did what he needed to do, and that it was clear that the Fed's overwhelming priority is pulling back inflation from the fastest pace in four decades. Investors are rushing out of stocks and bonds alike as they worry about the economic risks from the Fed pressing on with rate hikes, according to Bank of America strategists. Global equity funds have outflows of nearly $5.1 billion in the week through to August 24, with US stocks seeing their first redemptions in 3 weeks, according to a note from the bank. Rate-sensitive technology funds posted their largest exodus since November 2021, while high-yield bonds led redemptions of $800 million from global bonds funds. Another $600 million left gold, the data showed. And data out on Friday showed that the US consumer is weakening and hopes for a robust third quarter rebound may be overdone. Personal income rose 0.2%, much less than the 0.6%, while spending increased by 0.1%, well below the expected 0.5% consensus estimate. The so-called Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, or PCE, fell by 0.1% for July from 1% in June, according to data from the Commerce Department. And the August University of Michigan final readings also showed inflation expectations fell more than expected, with a one-year outlook dropping to 4.8%, and the 5-to-10-year expectation ticking lower to 2.9%. This round of economic data, along with all the Fed fireworks, still suggests it will come down to September the 13th inflation reports to determine if they deliver another 75 basis point rate hike or only a half point one. The pushback is coming from the idea that it's not about the pace of hikes going forward and how they tighten financial conditions, but it's about the duration of remaining at that restrictive policy stance, said Garrett Melson, portfolio strategist at Naxos Investment Managers. That's the nuance they're trying to push forward, and Powell was maybe a bit more explicit in that today. But if you listen to other Fed speakers in the last couple of weeks, it's exactly the same message. As a result, all of the 11 major S&P 500 sectors were lower, with the information technology, communication services and consumer discretionary indices among the heaviest declines. The S&P 500 lost 3.37% to end at 4,057, while the Nasdaq Composite lost 3.94% to 12,141, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 3.03% to 32,282. Having led gainers in the previous session, Nvidia and Amazon fell, and meanwhile Google parent Alphabet and Meta Platforms and Block also dipped. Dell Technologies fell as it joined rivals in predicting a slowdown as inflation and the darkening economic outlook prompted consumers and businesses to tighten their purse strings. Bank stocks were pressurized by a deeper inversion in the Treasury yield curve, which keeps a lid on lending margins. So, for example, there was a decline at Synchrony Financial, FV Financial Group, and T. Rowe Price Group. In other news, Moderna filed a lawsuit against Pfizer and BioNTech, alleging that the duo had copied its messenger RNA technology when developing the first COVID-19 vaccine. Now, these changes in the market resounded across oil and gold, with the long oil crowd having a problem hearing Jerome Powell through. Crude futures tumbled initially in both New York and London trading after Powell's speech, but by the close, oil was back in the positive as bulls brought the dips to prevent another negative close before the weekend. New York traded West Texas Intermediate. The benchmark for US crude settled up 0.49% to $93.03 per barrel, pulling back from the session low of $91.10. For the week, WTI showed a gain of 2.5% after the previous week's drop of 1.4%. Brent crude in London settled up 1.27% to $100.81 per barrel. For the week, Brent was up 4.4% versus the previous week's slide of 1.5%. In Thursday's session, WTI fell 2.4%, responding to White House spokesperson Karen Jean-Pierre's remark that the Biden administration will reinstate a nuclear deal for Iran and remove sanctions on the Islamic Republic's oil exports if it finds such an agreement in the interest of the US. Some of Friday's rebound was linked to the growing noise within OPEC Plus that Saudi Arabia's call for new production cuts be adhered to so that crude can be maintained at around $100 a barrel. But by and large, it was also obvious that the long end of the oil market was doing its best to ignore the Fed's determination to bust inflation. And one of the key ingredients to inflation, of course, are high oil prices. Of course, OPEC can and will cut production in its defiant mood to keep a barrel at around $100. But don't forget that Russia will keep selling oil at a discount of $30 per barrel because they will need to keep generating cash for the war on Ukraine. And if Iran gets to put more barrels on the market, then what OPEC cuts will be offset to some extent. Also, if you don't get a very cool winter, then demand for oil will tank some more. And gold bulls, hoping to creep closer to the $1,800 an ounce, found themselves more than $50 below that target on Friday's close after the head of the Federal Reserve signaled no immediate pause in the central bank's inflation-busting rate hikes. Gold is vulnerable here, as the Treasury yields could gain further momentum next week if the labour market remains healthy, said Ed Moyer, analyst at online trading platform Onya. The risks of one last major move lower remains for gold. The forward price was 1,750.80, down 1.16% on the day. The spot price for bullion, more closely followed than futures by some traders, was at 1,337.65, down $21.11, or 1.2%. And for the week, spot gold was down 0.6%. If spot gold's low of 1,735 fails to hold, the next support will be 1,727 and 1,710, said Sunil Kumar Dixit, chief technical strategist at SK Charting. Much will depend on how the markets digest the after effects of Powell's speech from next week. Gold remains a hedge against inflation for some of the most serious investors, although frankly it hasn't been able to live up to that billing since hitting record highs above $2,100 in August 2020, and many are calling it lower ahead. Bitcoin weakened after Fed Chair Powell. Bitcoin also weakened after Fed Chair Powell's outing, as risky assets are struggling as Powell's fight against inflation will remain aggressive, even as it will trigger an economic slowdown. Bitcoin weakened after Fed Chair Powell's outing, as risky assets are struggling as Powell's fight against inflation will remain aggressive, even as it will trigger an economic slowdown. Bitcoin broke below $21,000 US, and momentum traders will wait to see if the risk aversion sends prices towards the 20,000 level. It was last at 20,246, down 6.1%, while Ether was down 11.2% to 1,505. Historic data shows September being Bitcoin's worst month between 2013 and 2021, except in 2015 and 16. At the same time, the average Bitcoin price decline in the month is around 6%. Interestingly, Bitcoin's poor track record across the previous December months coincided with similar downturns in the stock market. For instance, the average decline of the US benchmark S&P 500 in September is 0.7% in the last 25 years. Traditional chart analysts have dubbed this annual drop-off as, quote, the September effect. Analysts argue that investors exit their market positions after returning from their summer vacations in September to lock in gains or even tax losses ahead of the year's close. Meanwhile, they also note that individual investors liquidate their assets in September to pay for their child's annual school costs. Bitcoin's correlation with the stock market has been largely positive during and after the coronavirus pandemic. Therefore, in addition to the September effect, these mirroring price trends could also increase Bitcoin's likelihood of dropping further in this ominous month. Bitcoin losses in 2022 were drawn from fears of the Federal Reserve's rate hikes and the complete unwinding of its $120 billion monthly bond buying plan, of course designed to tackle rising inflation. But several analysts believe that Bitcoin's recovery could be a bull trap, a relief rally that will trap investors who think the market has bottomed. But as the market's narrative shifted to hopes that inflation had peaked, a belief strengthened after the July US Consumer Price Index came at 8.5% versus 9.1% in the month prior. That coincided with Bitcoin and S&P 500 recouping small proportions of their yearly losses. From a technical perspective, though, Bitcoin will decline towards 19,250 by September if it breaks out of its current bear flag pattern. Now, over in Europe, the record of last month's ECB meeting, where it delivered its first rate hike with half a point moving, did not tell us anything we did not know already. First, the rise in inflation at near 9% was the catalyst for the rate hike. There were some there who wanted a quarter point move, which is not surprising. The preliminary estimate of this month's CPI will be released on August 31. The month-over-month pace is expected to rise by 0.3% after a 0.1% gain in July. However, the base effect will translate this to a slightly lower year-over-year rate, maybe around 8.8%. The core rate, though, is expected to be steadily up at 4%, though the risk is on the upside. And the market has fully priced in a 50 basis point hike at the September 8 meeting, with the swap markets actually looking at a chance of a 75 basis point move. On July 1, the swap market had the policy rate at 1.23% in mid-June 2023, but now it's at 1.77%. ECB officials were aware that the economies were slowing and a recession may be near, but in what seemed to some an innocuous comment, they did observe that governments may be better positioned to address it. The DAX in Germany traded down 2.26% to 12,971, while the CAC 40 in France fell 1.68% to 6,274, and the UK's FTSE fell 0.7% to 7,427. Those growth worries are very pronounced in Europe, as the continent struggles to cope with an energy crisis as gas prices soar in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The gas price shot up this last past week. These concerns are weighing on sentiment, with the forward-looking GfK German Consumer Climate Index falling down minus 36.5 for September, a record low, and a hefty drop from the downwardly revised 30.9% the previous month. Additionally, Britain's energy regulator Ofgem raised its cap on domestic energy prices to a record £3,549 from October the 1st. That amount is expected to go even higher in January as the UK competes with other nations for limited gas supplies and represents a significant jump from the current cap of £1,971. I did a show on this yesterday. Press reports suggest that Truss, who looks set to become the new Prime Minister in a couple of weeks, could trigger Article 16 that would allow the suspension of some parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol as early as September the 15th, when the existing arrangements that allowed for easier checks expire. And it's not clear what support for households under financial pressure she may bring. Now, across in Asia, Tokyo's August CPI, which does a good job of reflecting national forces, rose more than expected. The headline rate rose to 2.9% from 2.5%. That's its highest in 30 years. The core measure, which excludes fresh food, stands at 2.6%, up from 2.3%. And several banks are now warning that it could surpass 3% in the fourth quarter. A little more than half of Japan's inflation stems from fresh food and energy, with which CPI rose 1.4% from a year ago, up from 1.2%. The Bank of Japan meets on September the 22nd and is expected to remain the same outlier among the high-income countries and maintain the current policy setting with a target rate at minus 0.1%. The Nikkei 225 closed up 0.57% to 28,641, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong rose 1.01% to 20,170. This was buoyed largely by reports in the Wall Street Journal that the US and China are nearing a deal that could see American auditors travel to Hong Kong to inspect records of US-listed Chinese firms. The deal would benefit US-listed firms facing scrutiny from Washington over potential conflicts of interest with China, fears of which have dented valuations this year. But Chinese stocks were muted as an infrastructure stimulus-led rally appeared to have run out of steam. Investors were awaiting earnings from some of the biggest stocks in the country. The Shanghai Composite Index fell 0.31% to 3,236. Now, there are three developments worth noting in China. First, after several initiatives which individually have been played down by observers as not going far enough, China's high-yield bond market, dominated by the property sector, have shown some new domestic interest. The back-to-back gains are the first in 4 months. Second, there appears to be some progress in the US-China talks around those US regulations. And third, dubbed Teapot, the independent oil refiners in the Shandong province have cut their run rates to 61.3% this week. That's the lowest since May. This seems to reflect the poor state of the economy, hampered by the extreme weather and the shortage of electricity. Now, down here in Australia, the S&P ASX 200 rallied 0.8% to 7,104 on Friday, another busy day of corporate results. But of course, that was ahead of Powell's hawkish speech, so expect to fall on Monday. Even so, the benchmark index dipped 0.1% for the week. All but one of the 11 sectors on the index advanced, with energy and materials leading the gains. Shares in bigger cheese were the index's biggest performers, following an upbeat outlook. They leapt 11.8% to $4.17 in the biggest daily gain in 5 years. Perth-based conglomerate Wesfarmers stock rose 0.7% to $47.95 after reporting a $2.35 billion net profit for the year ended June 30, topping many analysts' predictions. Shares in global hospital operator Ramsay Healthcare fell 3.2% to $70.50 after its fiscal 2022 net profit fell 39% to $274 million. Also undermining sentiment was news that KKR pulled its $88 a share all-cash offer, telling Ramsay it would like to discuss an alternative proposal in more detail. Burns treatment specialist PolyNovo tumbled 18.8% to $1.64 as COVID-19 severely slowed elective surgery activity over financial year 2022 and led to another year of earnings losses despite substantial revenue growth. All four major banks advanced, with ANZ rising 0.44% to $22.96, CBA firmed 0.5% to $98.31, NAB climbed 1.02% to $30.61, and Westpac gained 0.42% to $21.68. Mining giant BHP Group lifted 1.5% to $42.81, while Rio Tinto's shares rose by a similar margin to $98.66. And Fortescue Metals shares jumped 3.8% to 1987. The Aussie, though, was weaker at 68.91 compared to the strong US dollar. Australian companies will pay out around $96 billion of capital earmarked to return to shareholders in the financial year 2022, and more than $40 billion will be in cash, and that will arrive in investors' pockets over the next 6 weeks, which will be then distributed into the Australian economy and the capital markets. But August's annual reporting season did reveal that corporate Australia is in a lean form as it grapples with the lingering effects of the pandemic, a changing government, and the shock of the war in Ukraine, which has driven inflation to a two-decade high. In May, the Reserve Bank kick-started its most aggressive tightening cycle in almost 30 years, and we're going to see more rate rises ahead, particularly now after echoing the Fed. Europe's energy supply crunch led to bumper profits for the energy sector, but headaches for other corners of the market as prices for coal, oil, and gas rocketed, fanning inflationary pressures and the cost of doing business. Coal miners Whitehaven, Corondo, Yancoal, and Stanmore smashed profits records and showered shareholders with bumper dividends, asserting themselves as the market's next source of super profits. On Friday, coal junior Terracom joined the club with a 10 cents dividend and pledged to distribute up to 90% of profits quarterly. Now, of course, the season did start on a rocky note when Rio Tinto more than halved its interim dividend despite posting a better-than-expected underlying profit, but its rival BHP smashed expectations. Australia's largest miner reported its biggest profit in Australian dollar terms and a monster final dividend worth $1.75 a share as its coal and iron ore assets shone. Fortescue Metal will release its full year results on Monday. The convention for both BHP and Rio to declare the dividends in US dollars, the currency in which their income is denominated, means heightened demand for the Australian currency as those dividends are converted for payment. ANZ estimates that $12.7 billion worth of dividends would be declared in US dollars in the third quarter, slightly below the record set in the first quarter of this year when iron ore prices were significantly higher. With investors equally anxious about how surging input costs will affect profit margins, many businesses proved their worth by showing that they were able to offset price rises, according to Jason Steed at JP Morgan. There is no doubt that inflationary pressures are building within corporate Australia, with labour and materials the most challenging areas, he said. In the majority of cases, management teams are finding ways to offset higher expenses, both through price and operating efficiencies. Brambles was able to absorb $470 million US in timber inflation by passing on costs through price rises and surcharges, enabling it to deliver 14% annual profit growth and increase its final dividend by the same amount. Ingham's was also forced to push through price rises to combat the rising costs of feed, fuel and labour, and warned of a second round of price increases ahead. The poultry supplier cut its final dividend by 94%. Coles tipped that food inflation, which rose to 4.3% in the June quarter in its supermarkets, would moderate in the second half of this year, and rival Woolworths said average price increased 3.6% in the same period, causing shoppers to switch to more affordable food items. While it doesn't pay a dividend, Qantas surprised shareholders with a larger than expected $400 million share buyback, and it faces a $5 billion fuel bill this year. While labour constraints were ubiquitous, JP Morgan said elevated job vacancies weren't translating into runaway wage growth, with most boards pointing to labour costs increasing at around 3 to 4%. And strategists agreed that companies remained cautious about the year ahead and held back more than usual in framing the outlook for 2023. Corporates appear to have been purposely vague on the outlook statements given the macro conditions they're facing, said Karen Jaritsma, head of Australian Equities at RBC Capital Markets. Generally, they left the outlook commentary open-ended as to where they land, with many not issuing quantitative guidance this time around. While Origin Energy more than doubled its final dividend compared to a year earlier, it chose to withhold earnings guidance for the coming year and put off a decision whether to extend an initial $250 million share buyback until later in the year. And AGL Energy also declined to provide guidance while slashing its final dividend by 70%. And JB Hi-Fi Chief Executive Terry Smart warned that Australia was entering, quote, an increasingly uncertain retail environment after reporting record revenue and earnings for the year and lifting its final dividend by 43%. The retailer chose not to provide guidance for the full year 2023. Now ahead, the US August payroll report will headline another data pack week in the United States, and it will be one of the last pieces of the puzzle for the Federal Reserve before it meets in September. But before the all-important job numbers, there's a raft of other releases to get through. Kicking off on Tuesday are the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index and the Conference Board Consumer Confidence Index. On Wednesday, we get the Chicago PMI and the ADP Employment Report. And on Thursday, the ISM Manufacturing PMI will be closely watched, following the further deterioration observed in the sector in the S&P Global's equivalent index. Weak employment readings in the PMI survey would suggest a disappointment in the headline print is more likely than not, although a positive surprise can't actually be ruled out. Now, the commodity-linked Australian, Canadian, New Zealand dollars have been on a rollercoaster ride over the last month or so, being held hostage to wavering risk appetite and shifting Fed rate expectations. All three currencies have managed to stay above their July lows, but the path forward remains obscure as China's economic troubles have injected a fresh dose of uncertainty to the outlook, and the Fed is nowhere close to a dovish pivot, which market participants were still betting will happen in 2023, but after Powell's recent comments, that has to be reset. In Australia, the second quarter construction and capital expenditure estimates will be due on Wednesday and Thursday, respectively. Frankly, the highlight for the week will be the August PMIs coming out of China. The government's own manufacturing PMI is released on Wednesday, and the Case-In one will follow on Thursday. Concerns that China's economy is stuttering have been weighing on risk-sensitive currencies as well as on broader risk assets. However, it's worth saying, even if the PMIs disappoint, the hit to sentiment might be limited this time following the announcement this week of a massive additional stimulus in Beijing, which went some way to relieving the anxiety, at least for a period. Meanwhile, in New Zealand, investors will want to see whether business confidence, which had slumped to the lowest since the onset of the pandemic in June, bounced back further in August, when the ANZ Business Outlook Survey is published on Wednesday. So lots to watch next week. But meantime, standing back, and as September looms, always a bad month for stocks, this looks like a time to prepare for the next leg down, not buy the bear trap. But I still expect loads of experts will spruik their buy now advice, but don't listen. Rather listen to the Fed. They've marked your card. Rates are going up and markets will dive. And gold, silver, or Bitcoin are also a downside risk for now. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.